Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. I'm your host, Jorge Martin, and today we are off to the south. We are going down by the bayou in Louisiana, my absolute favorite eating city in the world, en el mundo, New Orleans, Nolens, whatever, however you want to say it. It is the best, el mejor Rue de Bourbon. I think I said it right. You're going to correct me in a second, mi amigo. But joining us today is from Sports Illustrated and SaintsNews.com, John Hendricks, mi amigo. Bienvenido. How are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing good. Just trying to reel a little bit from camp and stuff. And, you know, Sunday was a good day off, but now it's back in the saddle with Monday, start a 6-day stretch. So, you know, not putting in nearly as much as the effort as some of these players are. But, hey, I'm just making it and just glad to be able to cover football again.
I tell you, you know what? And, you know, one of the great things that I've seen in your reporting on Saints News is the fact that is just how great it is to have fans back. And, you know, just can you give us a little bit of the feel of what, you know, kind of the, because I know that's a passionate fan base. I know people say that's the loudest stadium they play in when they go to the Superdome. But can you give us a little taste of what it's been like to have them back?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I get asked a lot, you know, what it was like, because, you know, travel, go to road games, home games, all that stuff. And I always say, people, I can never get used to an empty stadium. That just never worked. Like being in Denver and seeing cardboard cutouts, that was weird. You know, Vegas, they ring in the new stadium and there's nothing. All you can do is hear players on the field. And even in the Superdome, 3,000 people is nothing. You know, 70,000 plus is where it's at. And, man, there have just been some moments where I've just been, you know, we're up in the press box way up top and, man, it's just, you start shaking a little bit. It's just one of those loud, loud venues, and nothing compares to how much sound you get. And it was just a shame that we just couldn't have fans there last year, or just have such a microcosm of fans and what actually we normally would see. But hopefully that all changes this year. But at practice, it was good to see fans. It's good to hear them cheering. Man, better than all that fake crowd noise that they have to pump in, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I know another thing that you're getting asked about, and we're going to jump into it right away. The quarterback battle. Jameis Winston on one side, former number one pick, Taysom Hill, BYU. He's been in the system. He's been kind of like a favorite of Coach Payton for quite a while. You know, it's big shoes to fill to begin with Drew Brees, future Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. To transition into a quarterback battle, how is that? And I know your early reporting is kind of, you know, after a few days of practice, there's no way to find any kind of favorite. But can you kind of break down the battle and how you foresee it shaking out?
Yeah, I mean, look, I tell you first and foremost that it's going to be a battle, right? And going into this, look, I've been on the podium saying that I give Winston a 98% chance to win this battle. I expected competition from Taysom Hill. We're 4 days into training camp practice. Nothing's decided. And you're not going to see a decision in training camp, right? It just practice. But, you know, Taysom Hill, I kind of jokingly put it out there, but said, hey, everybody overreact because he took the first reps the first day and then the second day. And then Sean Payton comes up and it says, you know, kind of on Fridays, like, hey, we're going to flip the rotation, all this stuff. And so it was going to Jameis Winston. And, you know, both of them have had their moments. Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill together. It's something that we are guilty of in the media, that we just say that. But any rate, so Jameis had an amazing day today. You know, Taysom kind of struggled a little bit out of the gate. So, look, I would tell you that they've both been humble. They've both been very receptive to this battle. They know it's in it for the long haul. There's things that they both have to work on as far as mechanics and timing and throws. And it's really just all a bunch of base stuff. But look, I think they both look really good. I think that whole quarterback room as a whole, because their rookie Ian Book looks good. Trevor Siemian's look good. I mean, it's just been really a good camaraderie right now. And so nobody really has the edge. We're not going to know. You know, obviously we're going to have preseason on August 14th when they take on Baltimore on the road. And so I think that's where you can start to formulate a little bit more opinions. And the most important thing is the pads haven't come on. So that changes a little bit from a perspective of, you know, fans and just from the players. But so far, so good out of both of them. They've had their ups and downs, and they made some really pretty throws. And I think what I'm most excited for is their ability to stretch the field this season. So I'm really looking forward to whichever quarterback does win the battle, that the Saints are able to do that a lot more this year.
And that, and that's the thing. Can you give me kind of like a snippet of how you would see the offense working? Because they're both different quarterbacks. How do you see the offensive scheme being centered around Winston and centered around Hill?
Yeah, I think with Winston, what you get, and obviously he's no stranger to being a starter in the league. And so with Winston, I think for him, you know, I don't say aggressive tendencies, but I'd say probably a little bit more polished is his approach. I mean, he's attention to detail. You know, we're just talking to some of the players today, and he just says there's something about it. It was Eric McCoy. He just lit up. He's like, every time he gets in a huddle, I just smile. And it's like, what does he do? He just comes in, he just like looks, and he just kind of gets that mood right for some of his players. And so that's what I see out of him, is that, you know, he's a guy that's going to try to perfect his craft, that he's going to really focus on the timing with his receivers. And he's very, very supportive of all of them, even with Mike Thomas being out, you know, with that whole entire situation. You know, he went on is just stand up and say, hey, look, I got his back and we got his back and all this stuff, because there's a lot of crazy that came out of that situation. But, you know, it's just one of those that where with Winston, I see a lot of polish. I see a lot of poise. I see a lot of hunger out of him. And with Taysom Hill, I see a lot of the same things too. And I think for him, the biggest question is last year when he had his 4-game stretch, when he was starting, you know, look, you can't count that game against Denver, because that was unprecedented, right? I mean, who loses all three of their quarterbacks and then has to turn to somebody who nobody ever knows of, right? And so the Saints even had to change their scheme and that whole entire game plan because of that. And so you throw that out the window. He struggled against Philly. And then really it's the 2 games against Atlanta. But, you know, the biggest thing that's hampered him is his progressions, his reads, his movement in the pocket. I've seen a little bit better from them, you know, just looking at training camp and his body language. It looks like he's bulked up a little bit. I mean, the guy looks like he's built like a tank. And he said, you know, he's been working a lot more on his upper body strength too. But, you know, Jameis looks fit as a fiddle. He looks great. He looks comfortable. Taysom, with him, I think obviously you get the element where, you know, you got to respect him as a runner. You know, it was a play today where he's in shotgun formation and it was a design run and caught defense completely off guard, and he takes it about 10, 15 yards upfield. And so, you know, those are things that you get with with Hill over Winston. And, you know, with Hill, I think it's just about working on that timing. I think he has a chance and opportunity for sure, but to showcase his skills. But, you know, we're a long ways away on this battle, but at the same time, it's coming really quickly. So I'm interested to see how these two keep progressing. But so far, so good from both of them.
So let's go to the running backs. Shift over to the back. You did say I'm on board with you 98% that it's going to be Winston. I kind of look at it, you know, follow the money. He's not going to come back unless he has some sort of, you know, at least a handshake that he's the front runner. So that to me is the thing.
Yeah, I think, and with him, you know, it's important for both these quarterbacks, because neither of them are under contract for next year. The only person you have is Ian Book, right? And so they're playing for that next deal. And, you know, I think Winston, obviously, they did some stuff with his contract and things like that. Same thing with Taysom Hill. They manipulate the contracts, the cap money, all that stuff, right? But, you know, the reality is both of them are playing for their next deal. And for Winston, this might be one of his final shots. And same thing with Hill, but, you know, Hill, obviously, his role as a different player in different formations. If Winston does win the battle, I don't think Hill's going to have as much of a role as he has in past, but I still expect a split, you know, not much, but maybe if you say it, you know, 90-10 split or a 95-5 split, that you still can't keep Taysom Hill off the field. You're going to use him in short yardage. You're going to use him in different situations. So even if Winston does win, I'm expecting him to use him for sure.
So let's shift over to the running backs. And one of the big, you know, kind of takeaways from last season from that 4-game stretch is how little Alvin Kamara got usage in the passing game. And this is a guy, you could write it down, 80 plus receptions his first 3 years. He was on his way to, you know, having, just another monster year last year. How you've already touched on Michael Thomas, and we're going to get into that in the wide receivers and on the next position group. But when you're talking about Alvin Kamara, do you see his usage being any different with Michael Thomas's absence?
I mean, he's their best player. You got to lean on him, right? And I think that's the first and foremost thing. And this is the part you bring up a good point. You know, that was something Hill didn't, and maybe Hill tried too much. You know, I mean, there's obviously a lot of varying opinions out there, but he's your best weapon. You know, you didn't really use him until the Philly game when you were behind, you know, kind of 17-0, if you will. And so with him, Kamara, I mean, he's your best playmaker. You got to give him the ball. And so on the flip side, Jameis Winston has never been a guy that really targets the running backs. Maybe tight ends more, obviously, in their usage for sure, but in addition to those big-bodied receivers. But, you know, the thing is, he's never had a backfield talent like he does in New Orleans. He's never had Latavius Murray and Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, you know. But, you know, I think that bodes well for targeting running backs in the passing game. And so for Kamara, you know, they've been creative. They can give him so many different looks. It's whether it's out of the backfield, whether it's in the slot, whether it's lined up outside. I mean, defense is when 41's on the field, you got to account for him. And the thing is with the Saints, although they don't have as many weapons on the surface as maybe they've had before, you're still going to have to worry about it. If you double one person, that gives somebody else a chance to be open. And with Kamara, look, I expect a killer season out of him. I don't think that they'll blow the doors off of him, but let's just say Michael Thomas misses the first six games. It wouldn't surprise me to lean on that stellar offensive line, run the ball a good bit with him and Murray, and then try to just, you know, control the clock and time possession and move the chains a good bit and just get out of there with wins and manage until you do get your playmaker and Mike Thomas back.
And, you know, one question, you know, last year there was a bit of craziness at, I think it was Labor Day weekend, where did Kamara have an epidural? Did he not? And that, you know, the whole fantasy community went nuts. His health is looking, you know, spot on going into the training camp.
He looks perfect. I had no concerns there. And, you know, he had a huge bounce back season after, you know, the year before where he got hurt in that Jacksonville game and the MCL, and how he played through that. You know, fans read too much into it in body language. Oh, he doesn't want to be here. He wants to be traded, all that craziness, right? But, man, he had an amazing season last year. The guy got rewarded with a fat contract extension. I mean, the guy looks amazing. He looks perfect shape. And if you don't see the videos he does with Dr. Reef on Twitter and stuff like that, social media, of the balance work that he does and all the things he does to try to perfect his craft, I mean, it's really a spectacle, right? And so I think he's 150% right now at this point.
Awesome. So we're chalking him up as a top four pick then. So after that,
I would say so.
Latavius Murray, you know, you mentioned possibly getting more work in the run game. Could he be a viable option, kind of like as a secondary player to kind of, you know, if you want to go heavy on wide receiver?
Yeah, look, I think if you're doing fantasy football, maybe a low flex play. I mean, obviously you want to have him for Kamara insurance just in case as a handcuff, right? But, you know, Murray is very underrated. And, you know, I think the dynamics that the Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram relationship brought that so many fans love, but, you know, Murray just comes in here, he just does work. And he's been there for him plenty of games, putting over 100 yards rushing, leaning on that offensive line. I mean, you know, the thing is, I think he's just such a solid guy that works his tail off and just does a lot of things. And for him, the best thing to happen to him was to get in the New Orleans offense. You know, obviously he had the Raiders, the Vikings, a couple of things, not necessarily used him the best, but he's found a real good home here in New Orleans. I would expect him to have some more work. He does catch some out of the backfield. And then look, you know, you saw last year, he ended up being like the fifth or sixth option. It goes from blocking, falling down on the field, and then gets the pass and takes it in for a touchdown. So, I mean, there's just things like that that he can do. And you know, everybody misses Mark Ingram, right, and the fans-wise. But Latavius Murray has done a lot to command a lot of respect. And, look, I think his role is only going to be better. And, man, he looks sharp too.
You mentioned Michael Thomas, and you threw out the number 6 weeks. So is that kind of the projection that, I mean, as of, you know, here we are recording this on August 2nd?
Well, so we have to go back to the surgery happened in June, right? So that's about a 12 to 16 week time frame, because you got to let everything heal properly, and then you got to start running your routes and make sure that everything fills out. Okay, so best case scenario, maybe he misses just the first 6 weeks of the season. it just depends on how all the rehab goes and stuff. And the thing is, you know, Mike's going to be chomping at the bit to try to get back, right? I don't think there's any bad blood there. Obviously, the way the situation and how everything was handled is less than ideal. It's really just kind of a bad look, if you will. But, you know, look, you can't dwell on things in the past. The fact is he had a surgery. He's going to have to play a big part in obviously getting back and rehabbing and stuff. And so hopefully he's 100% healed from it, because those high ankle injuries are just nothing to mess with. And so, look, they can weather the storm without him the first, you know, six games. But I think some people are thinking maybe that game against Seattle when they're on the road on and such, that could be the first one in Monday Night Football. But, again, we'll just have to see. And but he's young. He's still a huge competitor, and he's going to do everything to rehab and heal up and, you know, come back with a vengeance for sure.
Yeah, I think one of the big things is, you know, people talk about like the how long the rehab is, but then it's kind of like getting up to speed for football. So that's a whole other element that thank you for kind of breaking that down for us, because that's that I think people are not taking into account. So that opens up some targets, a lot of targets. I mean, this is a guy who caught what 149 balls 2 years ago. Tre'Quan Smith, Marquez, Callaway. Those are the first two. And I know you've mentioned that in Saints news that Chris Hogan has been flashing early in camp. What kind of can you put on, kind of look into a crystal ball, and that I'm sure they have plenty of down in Bourbon Street?
And just, yeah, there's a voodoo shop that has those, you know.
Yeah, what do the tarot cards say as to who's going to be getting the targets?
Yeah, look, I mean, first and foremost, Tre'Quan Smith is coming out as the top wide receiver right now. Is kind of, at least on the depth chart, right? I think Marquez Callaway has looked exceptional. I think he's embracing the role. I think he looks he's smooth. You know, he's just working on with both quarterbacks. He's had some really good moments for sure. So it's Tre'Quan Smith, and obviously they're putting Deontay Harris in the slot. So maybe he gets a lot more usage this year. So, I mean, those would be your top three wide receivers, obviously, to look at. Outside of that is where it kind of gets interesting, because Chris Hogan, yeah, he has looked good, but I tell you, a guy that's really popped up on everybody's radar is Jalen McCleskey. He's kind of a burner type guy and a local hometown guy from Tulane that they added kind of late in the process, but you know, he's flashed a good bit. Aesop Winston Jr., a guy that nobody really knows about, he's been on the radar too. So there's plenty of targets to go around. You know, Kwon Baker, their rookie that they got in the seventh round out of South Alabama. Nothing yet, but I expect his time to come. And, you know, obviously we got to look at tight end. That's going to be a huge part of the shares. Adam Trautman is primed for a gigantic season, and he looks the part, man. He looks great in blocking, looks smooth in receiving. You know, Nick Vinette might work out a little bit better with him too. And, you know, beyond that, Garrett Griffin or Juwan Johnson. I like what I've seen out of Juwan Johnson moving from wide receiver to tight end. I think he's flashed at camp. Another one to keep an eye on is Ty Montgomery, because he's not going to be in the running back room anymore. He's a wide receiver. He's a veteran in this league. So maybe they feel confident about him contributing as a four or five wide receiver. But again, we'll have to see what happens as the pads come on. But so far, nothing that's been, you know, really bad out of the receiving group. And I just think this is, when it comes down to it, fans want to know, is this a group that can get it done without Mike Thomas? And then lo and behold, you get into the playoffs. Is this group going to be enough to carry him through and put him over the edge?
You mentioned one other player in one of your recent articles, Ethan Wolf going to George Kittle's tight end university. And I know last year one of the graduates was Robert Tonyan. Someone to keep an eye on, or is this going to be Trautman on the tight ends?
Definitely Trautman for sure. But, you know, you just find these gems and you find these guys. Ethan Wolf, you know, I think obviously it's a good look for him. And, you know, with camp, you don't have a lot of reps to make it count. And obviously preseason is going to be overheightened, because, you know, you're going to start 90, drop to five spots to 85 just a few days later. A week later, you're going to drop another five. And then it goes from 80 to 53. So, you know, whether he has a chance at the final roster, we'll have to see. And it's really going to depend on how good his blocking is compared to somebody like a Garrett Griffin. But, you know, I could say at tight end right now, if I had to choose today, I'd see him carrying four. I think it's Vinette, it's Trautman, and then you put Griffin on there, and then Juwan Johnson. So Wolf could be a guy that makes that 16-man practice squad. I think it'd be an easy addition, but you know, he's something that we got to watch and grow and see what happens if he's going to be able to make any more out of what reps he gets.
Well, you mentioned blocking, and I always reserve a question for the offensive line. And for several years, the Saints have been one of the state-of-the-art offensive lines. They've invested in it in draft picks, and I mean, and guys have grown up. How does this group measure up this year?
Well, I tell you, the offensive line is one of their strengths going into this season. And so I would tell you, Teron Armstead, Ryan Ramczyk, best tackle duo, one of the best in the league. Ramczyk got a really nice contract extension, definitely a bargain. Eric McCoy at center is just – he anchors that entire offensive line. You know, we're talking with him on Monday. It's actually funny. He's talking about how, you know, now he seems like he's going to have a little bit more on his plate to maybe call out assignments, because he would do it pre-snap, right? But you had Drew Brees back there, so it made it a lot easier for Brees to point out the coverages and stuff. So now, you know, it's just one of those nuances of the game where you just take for granted, and now it's something that maybe you got to learn a little bit more, have a learning curve. So with McCoy, you know, I think they've got those three that are top staples. Then you go to the guards, which is kind of the question mark, right? And they're good, but you know, fans want to know, are they elite and can they play at that elite level? I've loved what I've seen from Cesar Ruiz this year. He looks more comfortable. He looks just everything. And you know, last year as a rookie, obviously a lot of these players didn't have the chance to get into camp and do all this stuff like they did, but he looks smooth. He looks good. And made some good blocks. I've charted in some of my notes. And so that's good for him to play with some of that confidence level. And then Andres Pete, you know, he plays fine. I don't think, you know, he gets a bad rap down in New Orleans for a lot of things. But, you know, Pete is a Pro Bowler. He's been a really good presence for him. I think he gives a lot of good looks in the passing game, especially the screen game, just being able to move downfield. Seems like he might have shed a little weight in the offseason. But, again, you know, nothing that's not confirmed, but their offensive line is definitely placated as a strength, and their depth behind it is good too. So definitely something they can lean on to help win some games.
So last football question, overall about the defense, one of the top run defenses last year, still solid against the pass. It was one of the best defenses to own in fantasy, but I also want to concentrate on kind of like the look players opposing this defense. Let's start, how formidable is this defense both against the run and the pass? How's it looking so far at this point going into the season?
I think it's okay. Question marks and TBD, to be decided, right? And so what I mean by that is you don't have David Onyemata for first six games. That's tough, right? Marshawn Lattimore, we don't know if he's going to face any league discipline. Sean Payton has already talked about they need to get a second corner, and I don't believe that option's on the roster. You know, they've been using Patrick Robinson, they've used Ken Crawley some. They bring in Prince Amukamara in free agency. I don't think any of those guys are the realistic option to Terry and start 17 games like Lattimore could. You know what I mean? So that's a big question mark for me. And in the linebacker spot alongside Damari Davis, because the Saints like to run a lot of nickel formation. So, you know, because it's hard to keep C.J. Gardner-Johnson off the field. So obviously that usually gives them just the two linebacker looks. And Pete Warner is a rookie that's come in and had made some interesting plays and has been picked on a little bit in coverage, but you know, he hasn't done anything bad. Right. And so I want to see more from him in those, but you know, interior is a huge question because they had Malcolm Brown last year, stout against the run. And then as soon as he's out of the game, you know, for injuries, they get torn up against Philly, and that was a huge reason why they got torn up on the run game, right? And so between that, that's a big thing for me is who's playing second corner, who's going to fill in for defensive tackle while Onyemata's out, because that's a huge loss, and then who we get at linebacker. Because other than that, their pass rushing is strong. I'd expect some of those guys to twist inside some. Their pass rushers are premier for sure, and their safety group is premier. So if they can figure out those other little holes in their roster, which are pretty glaring and needing right now, then they'll be a pretty good defense, definitely one of the top half of the league. But I wouldn't go anything past, you know, 10 at this point, because they've got a lot of questions to answer and a lot to prove.
Plenty of questions. Muchas dudas. Well, I got one last one, and this is a fun one. And I mentioned New Orleans is my favorite eating city in the world. The one thing is, and it's been a while, it's been about 15 years since I've been there, so I'm due for return. What can you get a good taco there, and what are your favorites?
I like cooking in my kitchen tacos. I just made fish tacos Perfect. Last night, so you know, I'm gonna get the cilantro and the salsa, the salsa verde, and all that good stuff. But no, I think if you're going to New Orleans, Superior Grill is one of the places that stands out. You know, I live on the North Shore, which is right across the lake and stuff too, and I frequent New Orleans, but we've got a couple of spots here. Usually, I find the hole in the walls, the ones that don't have the menu in English, is the best places to go. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? And so I've been to La Taqueria. Jorge's in Mandeville is a big favorite of mine. And La Carreta, but you know, they have some of those over there. But Superior Grill, if you're in New Orleans, just for the experience, and if you like to drink tequila and margaritas, that's your place you want to go when it comes down to Mexican food and choosing right.
Other than fish tacos, any other favorites on the meats?
Chicken. I love me a good grilled chicken street taco with corn tortillas and you know, get some slaw in there, cabbage and all that, and top it with some cilantro, some sauce, some zest. Give me some spice, give me some heat. I don't want some bland thing and just a tiny little bit of cotija cheese. You know, it'd be really, really, really good. But man, I love any tacos. Obviously, look at me. I mean, I'd eat tacos every day, breakfast tacos, no matter what. But yeah, I love it, man. Chicken tacos, steak tacos, fajitas, you name it, I'll eat it.
Oh my goodness. I just had lunch and I'm still, and you get,
you must say it's time for dinner, right?
Oh, mi amigo, this was a blast. This was an absolute blast. I really appreciate it. Un gran placer. This was fantastic. I just want to close out. Please let our familia community know where they can find your great work.
Yeah, definitely. Just follow me on Twitter. It's at John J. Hendricks. It's Hendricks just like Jimmy. And I've been using this lately, but you know, those who are younger don't get that reference as much, but it's with an X. But obviously, I still try to throw it out there because some people remember who Jimi Hendrix was, but no relation or anything like that. Probably because I'd be doing something different, collecting some royalties or something like that. But you know, no such luck here. And then follow us on the web at saints.media. Easiest way you can go check up with all my work, and then on Facebook at Saints News. But you know, hit me up. You know, I'm always available. We've got a great following of the Hispanic community for New Orleans down here. We've got a great play-by-play announcers that do our Hispanic broadcast. So definitely check those guys out too in New Orleans, Mexico.
Oh my goodness, New Orleans, Mexico. Love it, love it, love it. Well, thank you so much. And everybody, eso es todo for our show. Thanks again to Anchor for being our hosting network and for YouTube for putting our faces out there. Please make sure to subscribe and hit the like when you're on YouTube. And you can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify. You can also find our website at familiaffb.com. You could find me at JorgeMartin17 on Twitter and our familia at familiaffb on Twitter and Instagram. And again, John, thank you so much. Again, Jimi Hendrix is on the on the Mount Rushmore of guitarists, and you're on my Mount Rushmore of beat writers. So thank you so much. And, thank you to familia, and remember, todos somos familia. Salud.